are now going to be listening to Dr. Charles Alessi. For many of you, he must be a very familiar name. He's the Chief Clinical Officer at Healthcare Information and Management Systems Society, HIMSS, which is a global advisor and thought leader supporting the transformation of ecosystems.
I'm delighted to join you today, and I'm ever so sorry that I can't be with you in person. I'd have loved to, but I can't be with you in Singapore yet. I will soon, believe me. So let's start talking about the digital health readiness in Asia Pacific. But before I do, I just want to just mention something about HIMSS. HIMSS is a not-for-profit organization, a global organization classified as a civic society by WHO. And in essence, our vision is to realize the full health potential of every human everywhere. So this is really what we're moving towards. And clearly, this is what you're moving towards. So there is convergence here in terms of our visions, which is extremely good news. So where are we? Oh, well, as Lenin, out of all people, Lenin said, there are decades where nothing happens and weeks when decades happen. And wow, has COVID really exemplified that? Because it really has completely transformed the landscape in terms of health and care globally, and largely outpaced the ability of health and care systems to cope with it. We see this more in Europe rather than in Asia, and I'll come back to that. There is a difference in the way these continents have actually managed the ravages of COVID. But as somebody who was particularly involved in the response to Ebola in Africa told me personally, Ebola's easy. And I went, what do you mean Ebola's easy? Ebola's the thing we're most scared of. He said, no, Ebola's far easier than COVID to manage because, of course, with Ebola, you don't have this asymptomatic transmission issue, which we do, of course, within COVID. So what happened, really? Well, we all know what happened in terms of the ravages this has made, this terrible pandemic has made to our populations. And we all know the heroism which our frontline workers have really displayed in the face of danger to actually manage this. But perhaps what wasn't immediately obvious was the fact that populations with existing non-communicable diseases, your cardiometabolic diseases, your hypertension, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, renal disease, some of the cancers. We're not in possession of a pause button. We can't tell them to actually stop their conditions deteriorating. And to a degree, they were ignored, certainly at the start of the pandemic. And the effect of this, of course, is excess deaths, some of which in Europe were certainly as high and in one or two places, perhaps even higher than the effects of COVID itself. But the effects of that, the inference of that is that digital transformation moved and started with telehealth from something which was a peripheral activity, 5% perhaps, 10%, always questions around, but you can't do that, well, you shouldn't do that, suddenly to being told, but you must do that. And from peripheral, it became mainstream. 85%, 90% of all activity, certainly in terms of monitoring of all these conditions, has moved directly into digital outcomes. Now, this is very significant because the difference here is enormous. And the effects of that are also going to be enormous. So all this has happened, and it's happened everywhere, globally. But we've got to be thinking in terms of what are the greatest challenges from here on. This pandemic is not over, not by any stretch of the imagination, but at least we have a better grasp of it with vaccination, with a better understanding of the condition. And really, HIMSS Insights published something called the Trend Barometer Report in 2021, which makes very interesting reading, because it looks to what the greatest challenges are now and what we need to do now. And it would be completely mad not to start with workforce. One, we have an aging workforce. We have a really shocked workforce. We have high levels of burnout. So there is a whole piece of work that needs to be done around workforce. We've taken workforce for granted for so many years. We talk about safety and we mean patient safety. We now understand we also need to think of workforce safety. Digital transformation in itself puts strains on a workforce that isn't clearly and well trained to actually manage this transformation. You lose a lot in a two-dimensional conversation. Like if I was with you today, I'd be making my points far more forcibly than I am at the moment. The other thing, of course, is with this explosion of digital interactions, issues like cybersecurity have become far more important than they were. We had small closed systems perhaps before, but now new players, new systems. One, there is the resilience of our present architecture, which is an issue, but also the fact that clearly we need to manage the cybersecurity. There were already quite a few attacks, cyber attacks on systems, particularly at the times where people were really expanding their services very, very quickly. That will remain a focus, absolutely, definitely. As will data privacy and secondary use of data. These things have not gone away, and we've ignored them for far too long. And at the essence of all of this is, of course, trust. Trust in the organizations that are providing the services, perhaps even trust in governments. And issues around secondary use of data are really important. And we've ignored those to a degree as well, because we've used concepts like blanket consent as the only way we actually interact with our citizens. But really, we are moving towards a more dynamic process of consent, particularly in non-communicable diseases, where we're looking at lifelong interactions. Interactions which really start before the onset of symptoms in these conditions. And also, of course, we have a real opportunity now to deploy tools which will assist us in actually getting to the digital maturity we need to in all the jurisdictions. HIMSS have the digital health indicators, which really are designed around assisting a country, assisting a large institution to actually gain that maturity. And looking at the digital maturity in different perspectives, one from the perspective of governance and workforce, one from the perspective of person-enabled health, another from the perspective of predictive analytics. Really, how can you drive? If I take my glasses off, I can't see anything. We need predictive analytics. We need the fact that we data-driven decision-making. We are in a world where we have the opportunity to do that. That will add to the outcome, which we're all looking to. And of course, the last thing, interoperability. The new world is one where there are a multitude of players in a multitude of situations, and we clearly need that. As we do fit-for-purpose regulatory policies, and Asia, in many respects, is exemplary insofar as it's managed to introduce systems really quite quickly. The old regulation provided by the regulatory authorities used to be really quite static, very laborious, taking a long time, but the whole nature of software as medical devices, for example, is iterative. Things change quickly. By definition, things are changing as they're learning. And clearly, you need a regulatory system which actually fits that. And to be fair to regulatory authorities, a lot of them have stepped up to the mark. And we're really seeing a renaissance in thinking around this whole process. So this is really quite encouraging. But of course, again, we're looking at unexpected consequences. Some of them are actually quite positive, and it's extraordinary to think of positivity around a pandemic which has been so terrible. But health and care is a complex adaptive system, and unexpected consequences are all too common. So we really are seeing some economic gains associated with the introduction of digital technology. You know, having a reduction in costs of, say, 10%, from these enormous sums we spend on healthcare is really significant. So there are some real benefits here that we can grab. And also, of course, it fits very well in the 21st century model of healthcare, which is person-centered. It's all about me. It's all about my pathway. It's all about a person-centered precision approach to health as well as medicine. And the new systems fit this absolutely perfectly. But we've also seen some really quite remarkable country-based specific advances. So, you know, in Singapore, we've seen the Healthcare Services Act and the start of telemedicine licensing. South Korea has seen an explosion of initiatives, all high tech around how to manage a pandemic. In Australia, we've seen the EMR and MHR actually unite to have a single version of the truth, which is basically where we're all moving to. In India, we have the National Digital Health Mission being provided. Malaysia, we're looking to having 5G connected ambulances. This is an enormous advance. Thailand, H4U, another big advance. And finally, Indonesia, where the Palapa Ring project really starts to connect that diverse country in a whole host of different geographic locations in one single space. So there have been benefits to all of this. But before I leave you, I just have to give you this final thought, because there really is a difference. And this is something which I saw, I felt from the first weeks in January 2020, when I interviewed people from Wuhan. And I've been around Asia Pacific a dozen times, sadly, from my study, which is where I am now, rather than in person. I think the memory of SARS that you had and of MERS really made a difference. You were far more prepared than Europe was. Why is that? There are a whole variety of reasons. One, the fact that you knew what could happen, while in Europe, people thought this is just another flu, and that's the reality. Also, you were prepared in you know, everything from PPE. You were prepared in terms of deploying test and trace. You were prepared in your innovation around actually managing even test and trace. I mean, look at the way the Japanese do it with their backward tracing processes. Their really consistent messaging. There are so many wonderful initiatives which the world can learn from. And at the end of the day, we have to still be thinking that Asia Pacific is the best place in the world. To see what the world is going to look like in a few years, because you do lead the world. You have all the ingredients. You have the population. You have the economic growth. You have that level of diversity. You also have the cookbook, because the digital health indicator, to a degree, is the cookbook. It tells you what ingredients to put into your health system to actually make it more digitally adept and more efficient. And the world needs to lead from you. Needs to learn from you, sorry, as you lead. And I think it would be a real sadness if we don't take this opportunity. Thank you ever so much for spending a few minutes with me. And I really am sorry I'm not with you. Believe me, I am really sorry I'm not with you today. I hope you have a successful day, and hopefully I'll see you all very soon. Thank you.
I hope many of you found that address really very interesting. For me, the last part was the one that had a very deep message for all of us, especially when he talks about the Asia Pacific and how what is happening here could be an indicator of where the world is headed. So now let's dive deeper into the issue in the second panel discussion, where we're going to be taking up the realities of digital adoption in advanced and emerging health systems. And joining me today for this discussion is Ms. Devi Mulyati, President Director of PT Prodia Widya Husada, TBK, from Indonesia. She's been well recognized as one of the Asia's leading power businesswomen in the Forbes list. We have Dr. Hung Fang, Chief Executive Officer of CUHK Medical Center in Hong Kong, and he's done so much work in this area. He's been recognized as a leader in the field of pandemic. We have Mr. Arun Goyal, Director Projects with IQVIA India. Mr. Goyal has over 30 years of experience designing innovative strategies for accelerated growth across industries, including healthcare, law enforcement, and the media. I'd like to invite you one by one to share your thoughts and give us a sense of the kind of work you're doing and the key issue that you feel needs to be addressed when it comes to digital adoption in your own countries. Devi, can we go to you first?
Thank you, Sivali, and thank you, Ross, for inviting me. So the digital penetration has some impact on acceptance of innovation here in Indonesia. The major changes that are driving patient or consumer behavior and adopt a customer-centric mindset. So one of the most important drivers of acceptance of innovation is how well the innovation meets the needs of the consumer. So we need to build capability and also the digital literacy and data security. And with the fourth largest population in the world, Indonesia has a potential in the development of digital health technology or e-health. The technology is expected to facilitate the people of Indonesia to gain health access more easily, which will be a benefit for more than 270 million people who live in more than 17,000 islands. So the public acceptance also depends on the competence of the users and adaptation from the policymakers. And today, many digital players actually fail to realize this and drive innovation that does not meet customer needs. So for example, there are more than 150,000 mobile apps for health and wellness, but only 52% works, and 48% don't even have a rating. And only 5% apps have more than 100 downloads. So in the future, digital health will not just appeal to the wealthier and of the Indonesian population, but also can benefit the middle and low-end segment. So the government has implemented digital technology to reach our patients, particularly in underserved areas, and to better serve universal health coverage participants here in Indonesia. And in private sectors, companies and startups in healthcare are developing also a digital health to improve their service and accessibility, building patient-centricity and data integrity.
Dr. Fang, may I request you to share your initial thoughts, please?
So thank you for inviting me to share our experiences from Hong Kong. And I think Hong Kong is unique in the sense that we got a big public healthcare system called the Hospital Authority that's actually responsible for overseeing the management of all public hospitals in Hong Kong. And based on that, we've actually developed a electronic patient record that's accessible anytime, anywhere in Hong Kong and that is available for almost two decades already. Yeah. And building on that, we also had the government actually started to launch a electronic health record sharing system that was several years ago that allows the sharing of health records between public and private providers and allow the sharing of like things like discharge summaries, medications, laboratory results, and digital images. So that actually it's a very important development in terms of integrating health records electronically between public and private provider. And then the second actually development based on the electronic patient record in the public hospital system is extension to the social welfare sector that allowed a integration between the health records of residents in OH homes with the healthcare sector, and including the use of telemedicine services, linking the social welfare providers and the healthcare providers as well. I think that's a very important sort of infrastructure that the Hong Kong government has established over a two-decade period. And then actually with COVID-19, it's kind of provided very strong support to all the sudden upsurge of mobile and digital initiatives like anywhere else in this region and also in the world, including, for example, even in host authority, they started to actually allow access of the medical records through mobile phones with digital health records. And also, you know, supporting a lot of initiative in terms of teleconsultations, telerehabilitation, telepharmacy. And so these are actually, you know, somehow related to the background. And of course, in the private sector, they have various initiatives as well. But recently, apart from that, it also attracts a sort of interest from other sort of stakeholders within the ecosystem, and that will include the insurers, the payers, and also telecommunication providers as well. You know, because these players within the ecosystem start to get sort of interested in the digital health space, and they start to actually develop apps and also. And the good thing about these some of these initiatives is that they try to work with the providers, whether it's actually mostly providers in the private sector, to actually help to transform the whole digital movement, not only from a sort of a healthcare system or disease-based system perspective or health record perspective, from actually moving into promoting health, wellness, well-being, that sort of initiative. So I think. The building on the foundation, I think at the present moment, seems that people are moving on and with a new sort of initiatives. And I think the good thing about this initiative is because of the strong infrastructure on the electronic health record, which is actually people in the public sector. So we got actually a closer connection between this e-health initiative with the providers on the whole. So I think these are actually the positive sides that has emerged from in the past year from COVID-19.
Dr. Fang, I'm curious to know, so that was almost two decades of preparation that Hong Kong has already put in. But during the pandemic, what impact did it have on on the pressure that health systems faced? Did the rate of digital absorption help ease that pressure?
Certainly, we face a problem in which we have to stop a lot of elective sort of admissions, apart from cancer surgery, of course. We still been able to keep our cancer surgery quite all right. Actually, as a matter of fact, because suddenly operating theaters are all vacant, you know, because we can't do adult operations. So cancer patients actually got earlier operation, faster operation, you know, the better access in terms of treatment, you know, as a result of COVID-19. But apart from cancer patients and apart from COVID patients, there are, of course, other patients are sort of waiting time and compromised. And therefore, digital health does help a lot. Even in hospital authority, they start to provide teleconsultation for patients with chronic illnesses. We also start with community pharmacy and supported by digital communication to provide telepharmacy, medication delivered to community pharmacies or some initiative even delivered to the home of the patients. So that actually helps a lot in terms of accessibility of healthcare. No longer actually it's stuck to a big institution, big hospitals, big clinics, but become a lot more agile than mobile. Now, to what extent that will sustain after COVID-19, we don't know. So far, this initiative is still being kept at the present moment. In my institution, for example, we've also been providing teleconsultations and for patients. My institution is a private teaching hospital and private teaching clinic. And we've surveyed patients, to try to study the acceptance of teleconsultations and all that. And from our survey, among the patients who actually sort of provided an opportunity of doing teleconsultation, they think that, they welcome that during COVID-19. But you ask them about their personal preference, they still prefer face-to-face sort of consultation with the doctors. If they're given a choice, because Hong Kong is so small in terms of geographical distance, And I think probably, you know, after COVID-19, after the pandemic, a lot of patients will move back to the traditional mode of consultation.
Right. I have lots of questions for you, but I'm going to first invite Mr. Arun Goyal to share his opening remarks, and then we'll get into a discussion on the digital adoption and, of course, the role of diagnostics.
Thank you, Shefali. Good morning to everybody. In India, due to the pandemic, and there was a strategically decision by the government of India to drive National Digital Health Mission. In National Digital Health Mission, India has come up with a very strategic framework while studying all global healthcare systems and adopted the consent-based voluntary adoption by the Indian citizens' digital health system. In this digital health system initiative, we are creating a health ID, unique health ID for all the citizens of India, which will connect all the health records with respect to all the facilities, hospital, public, private facilities and health records to this health ID. While creating the health ID, we have created the registries of all the healthcare professionals, guided by the WHO. All health professionals registry will be there. That will become a single source of truth across the healthcare ecosystem and to refer with. We have created a health facility registry, which will be having a unique single source of record for all the health facilities, public and private in India healthcare ecosystem to refer with. By creating all these health registries, these registries will be linkage with the health IDs, and the public will be able to refer all the healthcare professionals, health facilities, and then thereafter, all the health records will be provided on the mobile application called Health Records, NDHM Health Records, which will be like a PHR. While implementing all these systems, Government of India has kept in mind that no records will be kept at a central level in the government's possession. All the records and all the patients and individuals' records will be sitting at the respective facilities, be it hospital, clinics, diagnostics, pathology, or radiology centers, or pharmacies. So that the government and this particular mission is just to be a middle layer between the two locations where government is facilitating patients to interoperable all the records from one location to other location based upon individual's consent. That is a beauty of the system wherein patient provides the consent to transfer the records from one location to other location. And he has control of 100% all the records which is available in his mobile, all the records, whatever records he wants to share with the clinician or anybody in due course, he provides the consent. Based upon the consents, the respective records gets transferred from A location to the B location or to the clinician he is having a consultation with. So that is the beauty of this system which India government has come up with. Furthermore, there has been another subsidiary applications, as Dr. Fung has just mentioned, like teleconsultation. We have come up with a teleconsultation application across India. So people will be able to use teleconsultation across the facilities using this application. We are coming up with the e-pharmacy application also. So similar type of application. We are becoming a facilitator to the ecosystem rather than providing the application. So these applications will be there for the reference so that everybody in the healthcare ecosystem gets integrate with the system and all the records across the facilities, be it public, private, diagnostics, clinics, hospitals, pharmacies, all records get consolidated to the individual based upon its voluntary participation and its voluntary consent. That is what is the beauty of this digital health mission. I think and I'm hopeful that this will take healthcare digital mission to the next level in India and in the Asia Pacific region.
Absolutely. Just looking at what has happened in the past few months, I'm so keen to know, what has been to the issue of getting consent from the people. But before I get you to answer that question, I just must share with all our panelists that we are getting loads of questions for this session. And because time is less, I'm going to start reading out the questions so we can have a really fruitful discussion. The first one is from one of our viewers. It is, despite the importance of digital transformation to healthcare, the potential of digital technology in delivering better care, whether through early diagnosis or remote monitoring, hasn't been fully utilized. What considerations should policymakers create, or should policymakers make when crafting health strategies for a post-COVID world? What role does diagnostics play? So what considerations should policymakers have when they're crafting health strategies for a post-COVID world? And what role does diagnostics play in all of this? There's a very interesting finding in the magazine which says that with lab tests now influencing more than 70% of medical decisions, clearly that means that there is a strong role that diagnostics plays in this area. What do you think? Davy, would you like to go first?
Yes, thank you. So with the COVID-19 forcing consumers to stay at home, this has resulted in an accelerated mindset shift and adoption of many digital health technologies, such as telemedicine we discussed, teleradiology, teleconsultancy, telepharmacy. So the needs of supporting of this telemedicine digital health is the policies from regulation and policies from the government, and also the collaboration with all the stakeholders of the healthcare providers as ecosystem. So the potential thing of the laboratory that can also increase, to support doctors and also support other healthcare provider like hospitals or other clinics. So with the lab testing results, we can create more digitalized and also more informative, timely, accurate, and also with faster turnaround time.
So Dr. Fung, how's the experience been in Hong Kong? Would you like to draw upon your insights from there?
Yes. The question, part of your question is related to what regulatory changes is required. And that also correlates with the discussion that we just had in the first panel discussion. But looking at the experience in the past year on digital health, like telemedicine as implemented in Hong Kong, I think it's actually better to build on some fundamental values in healthcare and then sit on it and then to sort of experience and then to reflect before we actually go into talk about regulation. I quote you one example, for example, in telemedicine, pharmacy. In Hong Kong, the regulation has it that we have to have a professional deliver the drugs directly to the patient. Yeah, and this is actually a professional relationship. So that means we cannot use courier service to deliver drugs to the patient's home, as in the mainland, in mainland China, which this is what they do in terms of the logistic services. And for a long time, I was thinking that do we need to actually change the regulation in order to facilitate that? But it turned out that there are ways to actually do it, especially with the the digital sort of empowerment of what we can do nowadays. With, for example, the government's established sort of infrastructure on like e-certification of person identification. So these are things that are already established within the existing legal framework that does not actually need to change in order to facilitate that, the sort of a more so-called disruptive development. That's one point. The second point I want to make is just before COVID, in December 2019, the Hong Kong Medical Council published a guideline on the telemedicine as a guide to practice by local doctors in Hong Kong. And basically, the guidelines reminds all the doctors the fundamental importance of the doctor-patient relationship, yeah? And what actually make up the doctor-patient, a successful doctor-patient relationship, and the responsibility of the doctor to the patient. As a matter of fact, the responsibility of a healthcare provider, whether it's a hospital or individual doctor, to the patient. That relationship and that responsibility do not change. You know, whether we are in a physical space or in a digital space or not, yeah? And if we believe that relationship does not change, the fundamental values is important, you know, on the relationship between the doctors and the patients, hospital or healthcare provider for the patients, then we may not necessarily think in terms of radically changing, you know, a lot of things in order to sort of push the development of digital health. After all, digital health is only a means. It's not the ultimate purpose. The ultimate purpose is the patient healthcare and how do we create value for the for population health, you know, for the patients. And I think that's the most important thing. Yeah. Going back to I give a relatively long answer. Just the last point on data privacy, and that's important, and consent is important, and again, of course, nowadays we are also exploring ways of sharing records, especially if the Hong Kong economy is actually getting more and more merged with, for example, the Greater Bay Area and the mainland, and there's an issue in relation to as people cross the border become more and more, and then how to actually communicate in terms of their health record and that sort of thing. That sort of issue arise because actually it's now talking about sharing a record across jurisdictions, different jurisdictions, different set of laws. So these are the challenges that we have to face. We don't have a solution yet, but I think it will be a challenge. But within the sort of a local setting, I think we have to go and then to think in terms of what's fundamental in healthcare and then seeing digital health as a tool before we actually think in terms of and go radically in terms of think, you know, what sort of a regulatory framework we need to introduce.
Yeah, I it does seem like a challenge, and when you talk about different jurisdictions, then there are different systems prevailing. So how do you bring everything on one common platform? But let me ask Arun to share his insights on that issue first.
Yes, Shefali. So in pathology arena, we must think about regulatory bodies and uniform standards. Though in Indian system, the system which we are creating, we are adopting a global standard of LOINC and emphasizing that LOINC standards are being followed into the diagnostic industry. If we follow these standards and make sure that globally these standards get standardized across the countries and everybody is following these LOINC standards, will make interoperability of the data seamless and easy for portability of the data. Furthermore, just to add into it, with the evaluation of the digital pathology, digital radiology, it is fulfilling the gap of the pathologist and the radiologist across the country in the pathologies, wherein the standards and regulatory bodies' role becomes more important while evolution of the digital pathology or digital radiology. NDHM is making sure that all the global standards are being followed across the country and all the pathology laboratories, public and private, gets integrated into the system while following up all the global standards, getting the data transmitted following HL7 and FHIR Fire 4 standards, so that across the country we have a uniform data. And going forward, as Dr. Fung just mentioned about the inter-country data portability, which will be the future, where you know we need to think about. Currently, we are working into implementing the digital systems within the country, but going forward, we need to come up with the global standard so that the data portability across the countries also become easier to understand and integrate.
Right. I'm going to move on to the next question because we don't have so much time left. So the question is this, how can diagnostics and digital health systems be strengthened or advanced in lower resource countries for future pandemic readiness and to reduce the burden on lab and medical professionals? Davy, you have years of experience in Indonesia. Would you like to begin to answer that question first?
Yeah, thank you. So looking ahead for 5 or 10 years after COVID, I think the opportunity for labs and future health ecosystem, especially in the context of helping patients manage chronic disease, is tremendous. Yeah. And as Indonesian, we are living longer but not healthier. So with this, there are many opportunities for creating the digital health in Indonesia. And we make also the interoperability with the hospital that refer the specialty lab testing to us as private independent labs and has a national referral lab in Jakarta. So this has been driven by the rise of non-communicable disease for the chronic disease. And this is something that labs in the future, I think can help fight also the disease. Yeah. The specific opportunities include the creation of digitalized longitudinal record of patients' test results and making that accessible to doctors, specialists, hospitals, etc. With this is especially helpful for patients managing a chronic disease. Yeah, and also the leverage AI in diagnostic testing in the pathology and also in mass spec and also molecular diagnostic to increase the accuracy of testing and support doctors in clinical decision making. So in the precision medicine era, it's democratized also the genetic screening testing for preventative disease management, wellness, and more personalized treatment therapies. So this is in line with our vision for the next generation medicine. So with all those opportunities, I see that the goals of clinical laboratories in Indonesia and also clinics is still big, and learn from last pandemics. We are excited to do more in digitalize. Yeah, and in Indonesia there are two licenses. Yeah. One license for clinical laboratory and one license for clinics. Yeah, in clinics only allow have small laboratory, but in clinical laboratory we can have a big lab to the referral labs. So with this clinic model and also clinical lab model, we can create digital health for the ecosystem, also with the doctors and also with the hospital.
Right. Arun, I'm going to go to you next because the question is more for low resource countries, and I am assuming it will be a big challenge in India.
Yeah. So, we have, as I mentioned, I was opening my remarks, I mentioned that, we are coming up with some of the registries like health professional registries, facility registries centrally to become a single source of truth. Simultaneously, we are coming up with some reference application which all the ecosystem partners, those who are not having enough resources, can use these application and become a part of the digital health ecosystem. So we are making all efforts to provide the gap, which is fill the gap, which low resource people or wherever low resources are there, they are not able to come up and get integrated with the digital system. We are making sure that all the applications which should be which should enable them to integrate into the national system are available on the reference platform, which they can copy and use it. So this will not only enable their health services digitized, but also interoperable across the system. So they can download these application and use these application using the interfaces. This application will keep the data with themselves only. They can copy and keep the data with them. The national system will not have any copy of the data. The national system will only become a facilitator by keeping the indexes of those data for the interoperability purposes, that too based upon individual's consent. So that is how in India we come up with this type of initiative to make sure that low resources healthcare facilities also get benefited out of this initiative.
Thank you. Dr. Fang, very quickly, what are the key changes you would like to see over the next 5 to 10 years to strengthen digital health systems as well as ensuring diagnostics can play a bigger role?
Diagnostics, whether it's radiology or laboratory, in the whole healthcare processes at the present moment, our patient journey is really seems to be playing more like a transaction role, in the sense that doctors want to make a diagnosis and they actually conduct an investigation by either taking the blood or whatever specimen and then send it to the lab, or taking a radiological image and then got a report, and then doctors make a diagnosis and then decide on what treatment. So this is actually, the diagnostic seems like a part of a transactional processes. But I think there are now, with the recognition that data are being generated, and data by itself has actually could create a lot of value in terms of the care processes. So it could invite, there are two aspects that we can talk about. First is actually better resource area and high resource area and low resource area. And I think there are public and private. And so there are two aspects. One is like the model in China, which high resource facilities or providers are actually linked and being supported by high resource areas. And they can be distances apart, like big hospital in Shanghai, in Beijing. They are networked with hospitals or providers in low resources area, and then all sort of connected digitally, and they could provide instant laboratory and radiological support reports to hospitals in Qinghai or the western part, Xinjiang, western part of China. So this is actually, and now, of course, they are also extended between primary care and secondary care as well. So this actually helped to actually connect and then provide and support all these facilities sort of at scale. Now, this is still transactional, but the digital process will, of course, help to make this transaction much more efficiently at much lower costs and much more accessible. The second area, which is actually more important, and that is now with all this data, big data, and machine learning, AI, getting everything together, how can we actually connect and then even actually innovate in terms of developing new business models, new ways of actually financing or partnering together. You know, so diagnostic actually now could provide, had a much better opportunity now and also capability to work with providers, to work with payers together, you know, so that we will be able to actually sort of come up with some kind of new way of new business model to support a different way of providing healthcare and moving away from a really, you know, from a diagnostics being a transactional mode to really a transformation mode in the whole in future healthcare, I would say. Right. A bit conceptual, but I think that should be something that we should explore.
Absolutely, I'd agree with you there. Thank you so much for making time out today for today's discussions. All of you have raised some great points that needs further development and discussion at various other platforms. And I'm sure we'll come together again to dive deeper into all of that next time. Thanks once again, everyone.